Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome, everybody, to Redacted on this Tuesday. Our pronouns are question everything. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we dive into the stories the mainstream media largely ignores. We're going to cover a lot of news today. We're going to talk about the mass shootings across the United States and, frankly, around the world. And what do they all have in common? We will explore that subject on the show tonight. It might be a little uncomfortable for some people, but after all, that's what this show is all about. If you're not uncomfortable, then you're not growing. So we will dive into that.
We're also going to talk about a migration corridor from Palestinians to Canada. Has the world signed off on that already? Plus, Bill Gates has a plan to improve healthcare through AI. He's opened up a large grant for research on this. Is this a good idea? Some researchers are warning about that.
And Germany, what the hell's happening to Germany? Germany is clamping down on free speech in a big way. We're going to hold a candle. We're going to hold a magnifying glass and a candle. Actually, if you hold a magnifying glass and a candle, that's bad, right? Because then bad things happen, I guess.
But I wouldn't do that.
All right. Well, we're going to hold a magnifying glass and then I'll hold up a candle separately and we'll look at what's happening in Germany on free speech. Maybe they should reconsider their plan. All of that and more as Redacted starts right now. Get out your can. Welcome, everybody, to the big show on this Tuesday. So glad to see all of you tonight and hope you're letting us know where you're joining us from around the world. If you subscribe to the show, your name will pop up here on the big screen. It'll also pop up on the bottom of the screen here, too. So any new subscribers to our show will pop up here live during the broadcast. Good to see all of you on YouTube. Good to see all of you on Rumble and all of you on Twitter as well. Good to see all of you guys tonight.
Thank you so much for joining us. Remember that this is a free show, so we appreciate your support by liking and subscribing and telling your friends about it. We also have a free newsletter that goes along with it. When I say free, I mean free. We do not upsell you. We don't ask you to join the newsletter and then buy into anything else. It's totally free. So head to redacted.inc, put in your email address, and you will get an authentication email. You just click that. And then every day that this show comes out, you will get the Redacted newsletter. It's a great way to study up on what we're going to talk about in the show later. We also have other bits of news that we don't have time to talk about. Plus, it's a great way to keep track of all links to original sources so that you can read for yourself what we're saying, because we absolutely don't require that you come here and agree with us, or there's no requirement to take our same take on these stories. We appreciate a diversity of thought. We are respectful and diverse here of opinion. So please do subscribe to the Redacted newsletter. Again, you just get it. It's just free. It's not something that you subscribe to, and then we later ask you to buy more things. That's it. So please do subscribe. It makes a big difference.
Yeah, and I'd like to see all of our new folks here in the chat rooms. Good, say hello. Lou Flores is from SoCal. Good to see you. Let's see John Brown in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Jen Channing in New Zealand. Ibrahim Pasha in Egypt. Egypt tried to send some aid today through the Rafah border crossing into Gaza. It was just a giant truck filled with bottled water, and Israel struck that truck. So all of those bottles of water now you know, scattered across the ground and a lot of them blown up. So that was unfortunate. But thank you, Egypt, for what you're doing there. Let's see. Michigan City, Indiana, his overlord upon high, says Michigan City, Indiana. And John Houck says, yes, they are husband and wife. Yes, we are husband and wife. We are not brother and sister.
Nope.
No. All right, let's get to the news, shall we? Well, we've seen a number of high-profile mass shootings in the United States over the past few years. Can you tell me, though, what they all have in common? And I mean all of them. And the
I got this.
Okay. And the mainstream media has ignored this, which is not a surprise. They've ignored the link here. Can you guys tell me what all of these shooters have in common? No, 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 no. It's not
thoughts
the color.
And prayers.
No, no, no. Yeah. It's not the color of their skin. It's not the color of the skin. No, no, it's not guns.
Toxic masculinity.
No, there have been white. So it's not the color of their skin. There have been white mass shooters, Asian mass shooters, black mass shooters. So it's not the color of their skin. It's not guns. It's not toxic masculinity. If you give up, all of the shooters were using antidepressant drugs. All of them. SSRIs. So why are these drugs still allowed? Why aren't they immediately banned and pulled from pharmacies? Why are doctors still prescribing them? Wouldn't it have anything to do, of course, with the biopharmaceutical complex, would it? The tens of billions of dollars that would be at risk if we actually expose this connection? Gun control advocates, of course, always jump all over these shootings to blame guns and gun manufacturers. We know that. They try to sue gun companies immediately. Politicians use these mass shooting events to curry favor with donors. We see that all the time, right? They fundraise off of this stuff. You get the emails, right? If you subscribe to any of these people, you get the emails. Another mass shooting. Send me campaign donations. And the cycle continues. But no one in Congress has addressed the real cause of these mass shootings, antidepressant drugs. Hopefully now they will if we sound a loud enough alarm. A couple of people have been doing that. Our friend Dr. Pierre Corey, who's been a guest here on the show and friend of the show, points out that the FDA has been aware of these connections for years and has covered it up on purpose to protect Big Pharma. As the Midwest Doctor explains in his great Substack, I encourage all of you to subscribe. Midwest Doctor says this: let's look at these drugs more closely. And let me say this up front. A minority of people have a lack of let me just read this from. Once the first SSRI entered the market in 1988, Prozac quickly distinguished itself as a particularly dangerous medication. And after 9 years, the FDA had received 39,000 adverse events reports for Prozac, a number far greater than any other drug. This included hundreds of suicides, atrocious violent crimes, hostility and aggression, psychosis, confusion, distorted thinking, convulsions, amnesia, brain zaps. Yeah, brain zaps. Who knew that was a thing? A feeling that your brain no longer works right. Sexual dysfunction. Yeah, because that'll help depression when you're right. Sexually dysfunctional. That's great. That's unbelievable. And It's unbelievable thing. And as David, we've talked about this here on the show before about these adverse events reporting systems, right? Very few of them are actually cataloged, right?
Right. Well, yeah, because it's like for a doctor to have to, like, it's not set up so that I couldn't go in there and really fill out a form. And so doctors have to do it. And it's about a 45 minute to an hour long process if they have everything that they need right then and there. So estimates are that 1-2% of everything is all that ever gets reported. So those numbers are never accurate.
Right. So it's unbelievable. Think about the fraction of these things that are never reported. Who thinks, like, after their son, you know, commits suicide, you know, let me call the adverse events reporting hotline.
Well, right. Yes, that's because only the pharmaceutical companies themselves are required to fill out adverse events for any pharmaceutical, be it vaccines or otherwise. And the manufacturers don't really track it. They send it out into doctors' offices and then they're like, good. They do not encourage doctors or any hospitals to report adverse events. So when this happens, doctors either take time out of their day to report these things, knowing that it will go into a black hole because many of them are never investigated. There just is no mandatory reporting for a pharmaceutical drug once it's on the market for a reason. Now, when you contrast that to mandatory reporting for infectious diseases such as COVID or other things like monkeypox, that absolutely is required of healthcare providers. Why wouldn't the government want adverse events from pharmaceuticals? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a great point.
And also, like, if you're generally, like, with the vaccines, the mRNAs, you had to fight the doctor to even agree that it possibly was that. So they'd be like, no, we're not putting it into the VAERS because this came from this or this came from that. So it's like a lot of times the doctors themselves are on the dole and they don't want to go in and try to find what's actually happening, which, you know, would be filling out VAERS and saying, okay, like doing the research and be like, oh, it did come from this, but they don't seem to care.
Right. As someone points out in the chat, Alex Jones has been a gatekeeper on this. He pointed out these connections 15 years ago. Of course, he was vilified for it. We're going to show you more people that were vilified for talking about it in here. Second, thank you for your chat there.
Well, and also really quick, I just want to also say, like, we see them talking about, like, going to war in Mexico. Like, Lindsey Graham has been talking about that, some other senators and things, and it's over fentanyl. And they're like, the drug cartels are bringing in this fentanyl, but it's like, who does that lead back to? Who's making the fentanyl? It's not the cartels. It's the pharmaceutical industries. They're the ones making this stuff. They know what it's doing to people. So why do they still make it?
Right. And how does Congress allow it? So let's look a little bit more closely at these drugs. Thank you, Dr. Demi, for your $20 super chat. So let's look at these drugs more closely. Let me say this up front. A minority people have a lack of methylation or serotonin in their brains, and it was thought up until recently that the lack of serotonin leads to depression and that taking SSRIs helps to balance out this lack of brain chemical, but a vast majority of people don't have a deficit of this chemical in their brains. And furthermore, new research now shows this lack of serotonin has nothing to do with depression at all, the very thing these drugs are meant to address. More on that part of it in a second. So why are these things even allowed to be prescribed for that anymore now that we have the research, a voluminous amount of research on it? But many people use this chemical imbalance argument and they don't even know what they're talking about. And that's the problem. So in many ways, it's like saying that all fat people have glandular problems, right? Remember when we would always hear that, you know, when the truth is that very few people have a glandular condition that caused them to become fat. Most fat people are fat because they overeat highly processed seed oil-based carbohydrates. Turns out if you eat cereal and pasta and bread as a staple of your diet, you get fat. It's not glandular. So again, very few people have a lack of methylation. And new research shows that a lack of it doesn't even lead to depression. So these SSRIs that target this chemical are doing the opposite of helping you, as our friend Tucker Carlson explains.
It seemed like news to us. Last week, we learned that actually SSRIs don't cure a chemical imbalance in your brain. So the acronym SSRI stands for Selective Serotonin Reuptake Inhibitor. The theory was, has been for 30 years, that depressed people have an imbalance of serotonin in their brains. They have a chemical imbalance. If you give them more serotonin, then they become less depressed and happy. They're less likely to kill themselves, right? But it turns out that serotonin deficiencies are not the reason people get depressed. That's not just a guess, it's now officially science. This new finding comes from University College London, just completed a long and huge study on the relationship between depression and serotonin. It was published in the journal Molecular Psychiatry. Here's what the lead author of that study, Joanna Moncrief, said about the findings. Quote, "I think we can safely say after a vast amount of research conducted over several decades, there is no convincing evidence that depression is caused by serotonin abnormalities, particularly by lower levels or reduced activity of serotonin." What? That was the whole premise of the drug, which virtually the entire American population was taking on their doctor's advice.
What? He says. What? So even if you don't believe the science that Tucker just spoke about, because a lot of people choose to ignore science, well, then you should maybe pay attention to the lawsuits. Maybe you're more of a legal person. You don't like science, but maybe you're more of a legal person. So where the drug companies during these lawsuits, these trials, being forced to admit that most people have totally normal levels or an abundance of serotonin, and when these normal people take SSRIs, it can lead to psychotic episodes, violence, suicide. This is well documented. The FDA knew about these adverse events as far back as the late 1980s and hid the findings. Why? Because President Bush Sr. and his family had very close ties to Big Pharma, particularly Eli Lilly, the maker of Prozac. The FDA hid it from you. This is criminal behavior, by the way. When will these people face prosecution? And we now know the drug companies hid it from you as well. They knew the SSRIs had intense adverse events in their clinical trials, and they hid it from the public. Why?
Of course they did.
Why would they do that? Does it have anything perhaps to do with money? Could it possibly have anything to do with money? Well, it turns out selling these drugs generates over $40 billion a year for these companies. $40 billion. And the only reason we know about this, these adverse events, is thanks to lawsuits that have uncovered the truth from these pharmaceutical companies.
Wait. But they're all facing bankruptcy. What does that mean? Pfizer? They obviously aren't making that good of money.
Well, apparently. Well, if they have any more of these lawsuits where people are aware of it, again, this is why you hide it, right? Because Pfizer facing, you know, could be facing bankruptcy now as a result of no one wanting to take their boosters. And the amount of money, I guess, they poured into these things, that's a big problem for them. So, yeah, I guess if you, this is why you hide things from people, right? Because you don't want people to know about adverse events. Thanks to a 2001 trial, however, against Paxil manufacturer GlaxoSmithKline, we know they were aware of these adverse events. Again, if you don't believe the new research about serotonin, then you should at least want to know if you're deficient in this chemical, right? This serotonin. After all, that's why the doctor is prescribing it to you in the first place. You need more of it, so here, take this drug. The truth is that it's incredibly easy to test for this also. Like if you believe that a low serotonin level leads to depression, when we now know the evidence is against that, but even if you do still believe that, it's easy to test for it. The specificity of methylation or serotonin testing is 98% accurate. These tests are incredibly accurate, but almost no doctors do the test. Instead, they're just prescribing these drugs for teenagers who, by the way, are feeling like teenagers. Oh, you're uncomfortable in your newly developed body? You don't know who you are as a person? You got hair on your balls? Your voice is deeper? You got hair under your armpits? You're emotional? You're anxious? You want to snap at your parents a little bit for them telling you to put away your clothes? Everything a teenager is supposed to feel, that's all normal. That's what being a teenager is all about. Instead, let's mask this perfectly natural development and give them antidepressants, SSRIs, without testing their brain chemistry to see if these kids might have a psychotic episode or open fire to Walmart or even commit suicide. So don't even get me started on hormone blockers to top it all off of these kids turning into trans kids or giving kids testosterone.
Well, as Thomas Sass warned in his books in the 60s about pharmacocracy, what we're doing is taking things and calling them diseases. When they are not a disease, they are normal human discomforts. Because he has the whole book, Pharmacocracy, is how, you know, there is no such thing as mental disease. A disease is a cellular disorder, right? Something is going wrong. And brain chemistry is not a disease. And when we call these things a disease, it leads to what turns out to be pharmacizing every single problem and handing power to the government and pharmaceuticals. This is what he warned about, and this is what we have.
Yeah.
And not just that, but it's like the teachers have become the diagnosers of these things. Like, I've seen several people that, like, oh, the teacher says that my child needs to be on, you know, Ritalin or whatever. But it's like, if you're a teacher, you should understand kids just have energy. It's like they just want them to be drugged up, drooling, take their naps, be good little kids, don't act up. But it's like they're kids.
Well, and school counselors are now empowered to be able to do this, right? So, Billy is, you know, he's acting like a teenager. Let's send him down to the school counselor. The school counselor then recommends going on antidepressants.
Well, they're sold this, again, as a mental disease or a disorder. And the same way we're told that obesity is a disease. It's outside of your control. It's a malfunction of the body. It really is not. And so all of this, you know, you have to wonder, like, why does the media get so hyped up about telling you that they care about your mental health? That has a consequence of telling you that this is outside of your control and that there are organizations that you can hand this control to, which will make money off of selling you drugs.
Greg Strasser in our chat says, a lot of Ritalin is prescribed to children. Yeah, Greg, you're right.
Yeah. And we've seen, like, personally, when I was married, we took, and this was probably 10 years ago, my ex-wife's son went into a psychiatrist, and we went with him because we were talking about some behavioral issues. And the doctor's like, can I talk to him alone for a little bit? I was like, okay. So I left the room. And then not even 5 minutes later, he came out and asked us back in and said he was going to put him on Prozac. And I was like, you gathered that in 5 minutes? And so we've seen dope sick. And in dope sick, we see that, like, these doctors are basically paid by the pharmaceutical companies in other ways to, like, go give speeches or whatever. They like, get money for that. And I was like, this seems like, if they can diagnose a kid to put him on that dangerous of a drug in 5 minutes,
wow,
like, that's insane.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
And that's not testing any brain chemistry. That's just deciding, nothing, like, probably these levels are low, so let's bump them up and see, with no pre-existing research about how it may interact with other things going on in a person's body. None.
Yeah, and I was livid because I was like, are you, obviously you're getting some kind of kickback from this, the diagnosis in 5 minutes, and my wife's like, let's go.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy. 5 minutes, and that kid needs, go get him on some drugs right now. So what I want to underline is what I just said. New research shows a lack of serotonin has nothing to do with depression. So then what exactly are they doing? Well, doctors point out that since SSRIs or antidepressants came out on the market, they have noticed an unusual connection, And it's actually pretty shocking here what this connection is. And if you want to see, basically to protect Big Pharma, that they've been knowing about this for many, many years, they've known about this. And again, we'll have more on that part of it in a second. So I want to talk about this, and I want to talk about how these connections are put together and how doctors point out that since SSRIs or antidepressants came on the market, we basically noticed this unbelievable connection between these drugs and out-of-character violent behavior, including suicides, murders, and large mass murders, which we might call, mass shootings. And because these drugs have spiked in usage, the mass shootings have increased as well. And all of these mass shootings have one common denominator, SSRIs. So take a look at this. This is the Palm Beach Post. They did a deep dive on these violent killings and SSRIs. And it's a pretty brave report, actually, for the Palm Beach Post. And they highlight a bunch of these different individuals who ended up carrying out mass killings. And they looked at 10 cases specifically. 18-year-old kills father 14 days after starting Prozac. And that's the Eli Lilly case, which we'll talk about in a second. Basically Eli Lilly got off on this because he said, SSRI, they didn't have anything to do with it. Oh, really, Eli Lilly? Interesting. Columbine killers, Eric Harris. Batman killer in Colorado just got off Zoloft and immediately went on this killing spree. Australia bans the use of SSRIs in children after 18 until under 18 after their killing there. Ireland, the fatal stabbing linked to Celexa. And the list goes on and on. 12-year-old taking Zoloft shot his grandparents. 12-year-old on Zoloft. Australia man fatally shoots wife, daughter, four grandchildren on SSRIs.
See, why is a 12-year-old on Zoloft?
Exactly. Kids depressed at 12 years old, get them on drugs.
We certainly can't hope that we could help make him comfortable and mentally resilient.
No, of course not. So we got to get him on drugs.
I wonder how much that kid went outside, because you know how much outside can actually help that? Like, we used to get locked outside. That was our drug. My mom would lock the door and say, don't come back till dinner.
Now, vitamin
very
D.
Very anachronistic of you.
Yeah. Get out of here. Don't come back till dinner. As Tucker pointed out, these antidepressant drugs are everywhere, and that between 1991 and 2018, total SSRI prescriptions in the United States rose by more than 3,000%. The number of prescriptions for most common SSRIs hit 224 million last year. 224 million prescriptions in a country of 330 million people, according to the most recent census. So if you just wrap your head around that for a second, chances are just about everyone you know is using an SSRI. How many of you watching right now are using antidepressants? Or I'm just going to look at the chat here. Or just let us know how many of you are using antidepressants, or how many people do you know are using antidepressants? Let us know in the chat. You don't have to be shy about it. We're not going to call you out about it.
No shame if you are. Yeah, no shame.
Yeah, there's no shame at all.
Yeah, and I think that, when I think about the conversation about antidepressants with people that I know that are in the medical field, it's just, it is baseline care. It's not like, can we get you to a point where you don't have this? It's like, let's start you here and then see if we can work you off, without much research on how to work someone off of that, how it counteracts with other drugs. There's just, you know, it's used, again, a lot like these transgender hormones, kind of like a Clinique counter. It's like, oh, should we turn that shade of foundation up or down? Let's see how you're feeling, right? It's a very imprecise science.
So nearly...
back when my kid, sorry, really quick, when my son went on those things, like against my wishes, his mom put him on him, and then he couldn't sleep because of Ritalin. So then they're like, well, then we gave him like Clonidine or something like that to sleep. And they were like, you know, because it messed with his memory. They're like, if he takes two of those, it could kill him. So it's like, you know, you're giving a 14-year-old kid these drugs and expecting them to remember not to take too much. But it's like they keep adding on, like, oh, so you've got this. Well, let's counter that with this. And then by the end of it, you're on this whole smorgasbord of drugs to handle your depression, which makes it much worse in many cases.
And, of course,
well, that happened.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No,
I was going to point out that.
Go ahead.
Oh, there's a delay. So this happened to me when I was in middle school. They started me on Ritalin for ADHD. And then because of the effects of that, then I was taking lithium. And then I ended up taking Depakote because of the two of those. And Depakote is an antipsychotic. And so all this when I was in middle school. And so when I was 18, I had enlisted. I was in delayed enlistment into the Army in the EOD program. So I'd got my spot there. I'd already been through, like, the MEPS and everything. And at the last minute, I couldn't get security clearance because I had taken an antipsychotic. And so because of that, like, I ended up not having that military career. Basically, at that point, the only thing available was infantry, which I wasn't particularly interested in at the time.
Wow.
So that, like, just all of that just because of the drug cocktail that they put me through, that in the end, it was really just because I think about more than one thing at a time, and they didn't like that.
And, I mean, look at how you're, that's crazy, how you can ruin a kid's life with that kind of thing. And then what we're doing now with these cross-sex hormones, which is incredibly uncomfortable for children and painful. And then, yeah, you could easily see someone like that being given cross-sex hormones or puberty blockers or what have you, all the psychosis that goes along with it, which usually is pre-existing. And then what you would need to sort of, I don't know, play a chemistry game with it. Otherwise,
a lot of our viewers, I'm seeing a lot of people in our chat room saying, no way, I would never touch this stuff. And there's just so many people saying, nope, I take walks, I meditate, I sunbathe, I go out in the sun, I get vitamin D, I take walks with my dog. No. So that's amazing. So I'm glad we have such a, I don't know, maybe an enlightened audience here. And if you are on them, we should point out that, you know, again, doctors say you should never, ever go cold turkey, because a number of these major violent incidents have happened when people went off of them immediately, or when just on them. It happens like at the beginning, or like they go cold turkey and they don't like wean themselves off. Now, we're not doctors, so consult your doctor if that's something you're considering doing again. But that's where a lot of these violent episodes have happened, almost all of them, when they went on them or went right off of them. So be very, very careful and consult your doctor. So nearly 70% of all Americans are taking antidepressants. 70%.
That and is incidentally the same percentage of Americans that are overweight.
Whoa, perhaps not incidental, right? I mean, it's unbelievable. You become like sloth-like, I guess, you know?
And 70%. The other 30% of us are just holding on to keep control of our bodies from the food industry and the pharmaceutical industry. Oh my gosh, you
guys. Where was the 30% in the movie WALL-E? We never saw the 30%.
Well, they the maybe robots. Stayed on Earth.
So I'm just going to say the robots.
So nearly 70% of all Americans are taking antidepressants. And suicide rates have jumped 35%. I'm sure there's no connection at all, but oh, wait a second. Drug makers are being forced to admit the truth. Eli Lilly, for example, hid documents during a 1996 murder trial. Those documents proved that they knew Prozac creates an increased risk of suicide and violent behavior for those who take the drug. That was the murder trial for Kurt Danish. Here's Kurt Danish. Here he was, 18 years old. He was 18 years old. He was given Prozac, and 17 days later, he shot his father, killed him, the person he loved the most in the world.
Jeez.
And he said he had no memory of the shooting at all. Then he went to prison for it. Yeah, he went to prison for it. And it was a 60-year prison sentence. It was a 22 to 60-year prison sentence based on whatever kind of behavior he had. Well, 26 years later, he's out of prison now. And he's on a mission to stop the use of these drugs. Here's what he looks like today. So he's out of prison now. And he'll be under probation till he's 78 years old for this. And living with a lifetime of trauma for what he did to his father. During the 1996 court case, Eli Lilly lied in court and claimed that Prozac would not have caused this aggressive behavior at all. And then he was convicted and went to prison for it. But they were lying, because documents then were revealed in 2004 showing Lilly had concealed data from 1988 showing that Prozac, in fact, did cause violence and suicide. So here is Kurt explaining now how, if you're planning on taking these drugs, you should at least test yourself first. Watch.
Hi, my name is Kurt Danish. In July 2020, I was released from prison after serving 24 years for third-degree murder. In 1996, at the age of 18, I shot and killed my father while having a violent reaction to Prozac. I had taken the drug for 2 weeks when I stopped at cold turkey. In 2008, DNA testing confirmed that I am a poor metabolizer of Prozac. I was shocked to learn that hidden in the warning of the drug is the fact that 7% of the population suffer from a liver enzyme deficiency that increases the risk of suffering adverse effects from antidepressants, including violence. A simple DNA swab test can reveal whether you too are a poor metabolizer. I encourage everyone who considers taking one of these drugs to get tested before they take any antidepressants. If your doctor isn't aware of the test, educate them yourself. Nothing will bring my dad back or erase the guilt, remorse, and memories I live with every day. But it is my hope that my experience can be used to prevent future tragedy. Don't take my word for it. Do your own research. The risk is real.
So actor Tom Cruise, you'll recall, spoke out about these antidepressants with sexual predator Matt Lauer on the Today Show. And Tom Cruise was destroyed over this interview. Boy, did they come after them. Big Pharma really put the hurt on Tom Cruise after this interview. Watch.
Here we are today, where I talk out against drugs and psychiatric abuses of electric shocking people, okay, against their will, of drugging children with them not knowing the effects of these drugs. Do you know what Adderall is? Do you know Ritalin? Do you know now that Ritalin is a street drug? Do you understand that?
Aren't there examples, and might not Brooke Shields be an example of someone who benefited from one of those drugs?
All it does is mask the problem, Matt. And if you understand the history of it, it masks the problem. That's what it does. That's all it does. You're not getting to the reason why. There is no such thing as a chemical imbalance. Drugs aren't the answer. That these drugs are very dangerous. They're mind-altering, antipsychotic drugs. And there are ways of doing it without that, so that we don't end up in a brave new world.
Do you guys remember that interview? He was vilified for that at the time.
I was almost going to bring that up earlier. I didn't see it was on the rundown.
Yeah, you're really, I was comfortable thinking that Tom Cruise was crazy up until now.
I mean, they barely painted him as crazy.
Yeah.
Like, can you believe this? He's talking against drugs.
Okay.
The attacks on
you're really
Tom.
You're busting my preconceived notions here.
Well, the attacks on Tom Cruise.
Still got the Scientology thing though, so.
Right.
Yeah. So the attacks on Tom Cruise were brutal after that interview, but he was right. He was simply saying that these drug companies are massively marketing to parents to give their kids antidepressants. Suicides up 35% since that interview. Again, 2004, it was revealed that Eli Lilly was lying in court. They knew these drugs caused suicide, violence. In 2005, there's now, because of that, I guess in 2005 now, there's a warning label that must accompany these drugs. And it warns users to call 911 immediately if they begin to, quote, act aggressively, or if they become angry or violent, and or acting on dangerous impulses, end quote. That's on the bottle now. Would you give that to your kids?
Well, a lot of people would, because if they're struggling or suffering and think their children are suffering, they're just looking for whatever help, and they're sold this idea that, like, we can just change their chemistry and they will be more comfortable.
Right.
And so, you know, yeah.
Think about, like, when you see pharmaceutical commercials on TV. Sorry, Philip. And they give this whole list of side effects at the possible side effects at the end of it. And like some of them are worse than anything that you're trying to get it to relieve. And people just like, yeah, I don't care. I'm still going to go take it because I want to relieve that one little thing.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, with my daughter, they had prescribed her an anti-anxiety medicine, and one of the side effects that were written on the bottle was suicidal ideation. And now, how are you going to take something for anxiety that's that anxiety-inducing? Like, she was so terrified of taking the medication for anxiety because of that. You know, it's like, it just, like, what? How can you prescribe somebody something that's one of the possible side effects is you know, like, actually wanting to commit suicide? It just blows my mind.
I couldn't imagine giving that to my child.
Yeah, your brain is not a chemistry project to just like try things out in this way, you know, and that's essentially what we're doing is experimentation.
So in 2010, the FDA found that SSRI antidepressants are, quote, the most strongly and consistently implicated class of drugs associated with homicidal, physical assault, physical abuse, homicide, ideation, or violence-related syndrome. That's what the FDA found. That's according to them. So I'll ask you, when will these drugs be banned? The FDA tried to hide this from you. They now admit that these things lead to suicide, violent behavior, homicidal ideation, physical assault, physical abuse. When will these things be pulled off pharmacy shelves? When will Congress step in? Perhaps instead of fighting over gun control, which is what they do, they run to that, and they cover up and mask the real problem here. Perhaps if these drugs were administered in plastic straws, they might be banned. You know, or plastic bags. Then maybe they'd have an advocate in Congress. They could get Greta Thunberg to come in and say, these things are in plastic, so we got to get rid of them. Environmentalists might step in. But otherwise, right now, they're still on the market, and I guess the next mass shooting will have the same conversation. Or no, we will never have this conversation. We will never have this conversation because none of the network televisions people ever want to talk about it. It's not going to be on the Today Show. It's not going to be anywhere. 70% of all Americans are taking these things. So there's a lot of money at stake. They'll probably try to silence it. But I'd love for you guys to share this, you know, segment out with people. And again, we are not doctors. We're simply journalists here, and we're presenting to you the research and what doctors are reporting and what the lawsuits are saying and what Eli Lilly is saying and what GlaxoSmithKline is saying in their own private documents and what the FDA is saying. You make your own determinations about that. And again, I want to underline, like if you are on one of these drugs, please talk to your doctor. And if you want to get off those drugs, ask your doctor how to do it. And they'll probably tell you to do it slowly because, again, a lot of these violent episodes that have occurred when someone went cold turkey and stopped immediately taking them or went on them. And that's when these things occurred. So, again, when will these things be banned? We've got more news to get to here on your Tuesday. We're going to talk about why Canada and the Trudeau government are basically teaming up with Israel to lay out a plan to bring 500,000 Palestinians to Canada. Did Canadians sign up for that? What about them staying in their homeland? That's a question, right? Why do Palestinians have to go to Canada? There is a place where they live. They have homes. I guess they can't stay there any longer. So we'll talk about Canada. But first,
we want to tell you about our friends over at Private Internet Access, because do you know that your internet service provider literally knows everything that you do online and that over 30 million people have signed up for our next sponsor? You've got to check out Private Internet Access because, of course, you'd never hand your laptop or phone over to a stranger and ask them to take a look at your browsing history. Well, probably you wouldn't do that. That's a privacy invasion. And yet someone out there knows everything you do it online, whether you like it or not, unless you're using a VPN. If you want to stop internet service providers and other looky-loos and ne'er-do-wells from always looking over your shoulder and profiting off your data, you need Private Internet Access, the world's most transparent VPN provider. A VPN is an app. It hides your IP address and it safeguards your internet connection through an encrypted tunnel. That way it shields your digital life from the eyes of those looking to exploit your private information or watch you for other maybe reasons that you don't want to think about. Private internet access works with all major streaming services so that you can access more content than ever before anywhere in the world. It would be really hard for us to research this show without one because we need to read news from all over the world. So a lot of times we need to sort of throw our VPN into places we are not. That's a great place, a great way to use a VPN as well. So if you want to enjoy all the benefits of private internet access, now's the time to subscribe. Head on over to piavpn.com/redacted and you'll get an 83% discount. Seriously, 83%. That's just $2.03 a month for privacy. Plus, you'll get an extra 4 months completely free. But you must go to our URL. Again, that's piavpn.com/redacted for a truly private digital life. One last time, that's piavpn.com/redacted.
What are you going to do with all of those Palestinian refugees now that Gaza is being destroyed? Well, send them to Canada. Yeah, you think I'm making this up? No, it's actually an Israeli policy paper that's being floated, a concept paper that argues that Canada would be the ideal candidate to house hundreds of thousands of Palestinian refugees. So all of these Palestinian refugees to Canada. Let's bring in David Craden, who just wrote a piece on this at the Post Millennial, and of course his YouTube channel, Craden's Right. David, so hundreds of thousands of Palestinians to Canada, where did this come from?
Well, potentially hundreds of thousands. Let me just say, I don't doubt for a minute that Justin Trudeau would take hundreds of thousands. That hasn't been confirmed. But this Israeli intelligence ministry policy paper, this concept paper that came out and was virtually ignored by everybody. I first saw it in the Times of Israel, reported on it, and they mentioned that Canada was considered basically the only non-Mideast location in the paper because of its lenient immigration policy, meaning it has an open-door immigration policy. I'm surprised they didn't apply that to the United States as well, because right. The United States has an open-door immigration policy.
So, yeah.
But I think they were probably considering the fact that Trudeau in the past, of course, has tweeted in January 2017, he tweeted out, come on over, come on to Canada, refugees of the world. Doesn't matter what your beliefs are, doesn't matter what your cultural assimilation factor is, come on to Canada. Canada has an open door for all refugees. And of course, many hundreds of thousands took him up on that offer. And of course, there is also the question of the Syrian refugees that Trudeau allowed in on bulk. And most of those people still haven't found jobs or livelihood. So Canada always leaves itself vulnerable to these sorts of things because Justin Trudeau is the prime minister. And Justin Trudeau doesn't say no. He has an open door immigration policy. He has an even wider door refugee policy. So I take this very seriously. And the fact that when the new immigration and refugees minister was asked about this at a news conference, he didn't say, what? Don't know anything about this. He said, well, I don't really want to speculate, but there is a war on, and we're open to bringing people in when there's a war on.
Yeah, that's his name is Mark Miller, right? Immigration Minister Mark Miller.
Mark Miller.
When he was asked about that, I think we have some sound of that. Let's listen to his response.
Israel's Ministry of Intelligence presented their government with a concept paper that suggested Palestinians could be moved out of Gaza and that Canada itself could accept them as refugees. What do you say to that idea?
Hard to speculate on it. We are open to those fleeing war. This is a war. At the same time, it's something that it's very difficult for me to speculate publicly on. I haven't read the report, would have to read it. But again, the focus, as I mentioned to your colleague, is to get a humanitarian corridor open to welcome Canadians and their families out of Gaza. It is still very much a pressing concern and one that remains unfulfilled yet.
So he's open to this. We're open to those fleeing war. This is a war, so we open our borders to this to the tune of 500,000 Palestinians. I mean, what would that do potentially to the landscape of Canada right now? And again, when you have... I mean, you know, the big question for a lot of people is, well, how do you separate those who are doing nefarious things from those who are going to be model Canadian citizens then? The answer is you can't and you don't know.
Well, that's specifically and correctly the answer. And that's what happened last time when we brought in a lot of Syrian refugees. They weren't vetted. They were not vetted at the demarcation point, and they were not vetted when they came into Canada. And the problem, of course, is not just that we are bringing in potential terrorists. The problem is we don't have jobs or housing for them. We have a massive housing problem in Canada right now. People cannot afford to buy homes, and the average price of an apartment, a one-bedroom bachelor apartment in any Canadian city, is more than a mortgage. So where are these people going to stay? Are they going to be staying again in four-star hotels like we did the last time we had a surge in immigration, refugees at the border? Or are we going to create another tent city at the Ontario-New York border like we did the last time? But it's getting kind of cold. I don't know if that's going to be an option. But, you know, maybe we can use heat pumps to keep them all warm. And that's, right. Once again, this is all imploding on the Trudeau government. All of his bad policies, from immigration and refugees to telling people to heat their homes with heat pumps.
It's quite a legacy. And I have to imagine Trudeau's coziness with the Israeli government is, of course, a big piece of this. And, you know, and also part of a larger World Economic Forum plan to get rid of borders and to open up and push mass immigration into these World Economic Forum back countries, into the United States, which is openly part of the policy papers of the World Economic Forum, and into Canada. And as a young protege of Klaus Schwab, of course, this is easily discussed and probably a great plan for the Israelis to, you know, get rid of Gaza completely, wipe out all Palestinians who are in that area, push them out. We heard from the Heritage Minister of Israel just this weekend saying it'd be fine to send them to Ireland, to the deserts, and now to Canada. Seems like it's a perfect, it's a perfect solution.
Well, one of the problems I have with this is that the Palestinian Authority has rejected the concept, has rejected the plan. So this amounts to forced resettlement of people. And we haven't really heard that term for quite a while, but it was in the vernacular of Nazi Germany. They used to talk about forced resettlement, and what they really meant, of course, was extermination and genocide. I'm not suggesting that's the plan here, but what is Israel doing forcibly resettling people who don't want to go to Canada, who don't want to go to Egypt, who don't want to go to Ireland, and yet this seems to be the plan. What is Canada even linking itself to this kind of concept paper to? Why are they even entertaining the idea? Because this is forced resettlement. It's not refugees. This is not emigration from Gaza. Now, I think this is a tremendously difficult and problematic position to take on this. And I'm surprised nobody is even raising this as an issue. These people would be coming here against their will. I really think this is another issue that has to be considered. And Trudeau has been all over the map, by the way, on this issue. He started out extremely pro-Israel. He's moved quite a bit now. Now he's reaching out to Palestinians because he's worried about losing votes there. He's worried about looking like a bad guy. He wants to somehow be in the squishy middle in all this and appease everybody. But of course, just like every other policy he's pushing, he's losing support from all quarters, from both sides, who see him as a weak and a completely ineffective leader. And once again, the dominoes are falling on Justin Trudeau with this policy.
What has immigration done to Canada? I mean, I've seen what it's done to the United States, and you certainly see what it's doing to tap strained resources in liberal cities. And you have mayors and you have governors now saying enough is enough. We were once sanctuary cities. We can't tolerate it anymore. Stop sending people here. We'll have to declare a state of emergency. What over the past few years under Justin Trudeau's open door policy since 2000, I think he famously sent out that statement in 2017, where he said, you know, wherever you are, come to Canada. Like, we welcome all refugees, you know, come here, which sounds great. Like, if we are Western countries destroying your country, Right. We go into Somalia and destabilize Somalia. We go into Sudan and destabilize Sudan. We go into Nicaragua and destabilize Nicaragua. And then we wonder why Nicaraguans are coming on trains into the United States. You know, I'm okay with that because we've screwed up their country and we've destroyed them. And I think that that's probably a lesson in not destroying people's countries and in meddling in other people's countries. But how has it affected Canada over the past few years since he's going to push this open door policy?
Well, as I mentioned, it's contributed to a tremendous unemployment and a housing problem because these people are not necessarily equipped when they arrive here to get jobs. There's no jobs available and there's no housing available. But even more important, I don't care what the culture or religion is of the people coming here. I do care if they want to assimilate into Canadian culture and embrace democratic values. And what the Trudeau government has done is created a ghettoization of refugees and immigrants by sending them all to the same place. They will send them all to Toronto, to Vancouver, to Calgary, to major urban centers. Leave them there. And what are they expected to do except coalesce and isolate? And this is where radicalization can potentially occur. And this is where they become disenfranchised from a society that might be able to nourish and enrich them. And contrary to that, we, as I said, we've created a ghettoization. We've created little ghettos of immigrants and refugees across Canada. And this is probably why we are seeing the same kinds of protests in Canada that we just saw over the weekend in Washington, D.C. And I believe these protests are being engineered and controlled by Antifa and the far left. But there are far too many people who have come to Canada and don't understand what Canada is any more than those who come to the United States don't understand what that country is all about. And they choose to isolate because they have been forced to isolate by the government. They send them all to the same enclave. And this is a very bad mistake in immigration policy.
Yeah, creating mini nations within these countries. And you're absolutely right, it's forced resettlement. David Creighton, thank you so much. We'll see what the Trudeau government has to say about this policy paper going further as the Israeli incursion into Gaza continues. We'll see over the next couple of weeks what this looks like with those refugees because they're running out of space and, of course, they're being slaughtered in the meantime. David, great to see you. Thanks as always.
Thank you, Clayton.
Thanks, David. And I just saw someone in the chat say, can you please clip this segment and post it ASAP? And yes, we always we try to post each of our individual segments later on so that if you'd like to share them out there, please, you can post them on social media. So we do the whole like 90-minute show and then we try to chop it up and post it later. So you can find those on our Rumble channel as well as YouTube. So thank you guys. And all you need to do is subscribe to the channel. If you subscribe, your name will pop up here on the big screen during the show. But also turn on the little bell notification so that when we post one of those videos, you can receive an alert. Hopefully, if YouTube sends out those alerts, I don't know if they do. How many of you guys get alerts? Let me know in the chat. I know some people say, well, I sign up for the alerts or I turn on the little bell, but I never get a notification. So I don't know.
I know I've told you this before, but me being who I am, I have never received a notification from Redacted going live or otherwise.
And you work on the show and you have.
Yeah, I know.
Well, you know like where we're going to start.
Yeah.
I see more Redacted than any person alive. And
that's right.
Unless there's people out there watching each show like five times, then you got me beat. But I think I got you.
Because Philip will go through then and, of course, and cut them and publish them later. So anyway, so thank you for that. We've got more news to get to here on your Taco Tuesday. We're going to look at Bill Gates and what he's doing in the healthcare field. Hey, Bill Gates is getting ready for his new venture in healthcare. Are you guys all excited? Also, Germany. Yeah, Germany is clamping down on free speech. And that should come as a shock. Actually, a pretty big shock. One of the biggest economies in Europe, leading the charge on clamping down on free speech. We'll tell you what they're doing. But first,
we want to tell you about our friends over at Genucel, because Thanksgiving is 2 weeks away, which means that the best Genucel sale of the year is here just in time for the holidays. The Genucel most popular package is back for you to look stunning for your Thanksgiving gatherings. And with the brand new Genucel 3 also included in your most popular package, means you look 10, 15, maybe 20 years younger guaranteed with the best natural skincare anywhere. Sunny from Rockford, Illinois said that she'd give Genucel 5 stars because the products do exactly what they're promised and that it's working, and she recommends.
We had some viewers the other night said they got Genucel and they love it.
Yeah.
Natalie, I don't know if you know this, just looking at Natalie, I don't know if you guys can tell this or not, but Natalie is actually 76 years old.
Mm.
76 years old, and because
you don't talk about a woman's age, honey,
but she uses Genucel and you can't even tell.
Well, Genucel, the experience is like no other, but don't take our word for it. You'll look and feel absolutely your best or your money back, no questions asked. So go to type the word Genucel.com/redacted for an incredible holiday discount, better than 70% off of Genucel's most popular package with Genucel 3 and dark spot corrector. So again, the URL is genucel.com/redacted. And for results in 12 hours or less, the immediate effect is included free. Again, that's genucel.com/redacted. You also can get a free upgrade to priority shipping at checkout. That's genucel.com/redacted. Well, Bill Gates wants to use AI, that's artificial intelligence, to revolutionize healthcare, and some researchers are warning that maybe that's not a good idea. So we're going to tell you exactly what he and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation intends to do with healthcare, how it might actually help them instead of poor people, and why this may not be a good idea. Now, anytime we see the words Bill Gates and helping poor people, we need to ask ourselves these questions. Okay, number one, what liberties do said poor people have to give up for this privilege of being Bill Gates' guinea pigs? That's one. What data will they be selling to him or giving up? And what is the profit possibility for Bill Gates and his enterprises? So it turns out there are worrying answers to all of these questions for this new initiative from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Let's take a look at it for ourselves. They announced earlier this year in August that they were launching a fund to use artificial intelligence for healthcare in low-income communities. Here's how they put it. They say they're going to get a group of 50 grant recipients who are developing global health and development solutions for their communities using AI-enabled large language models. We're going to talk about what that is for a second, with the goal of reducing global inequality. So they're saying this is mostly for people, and they're going to use large language models. What those are models that sort of take in and learn from us and then come up with solutions. So it's like a vacuum of human experience and human knowledge, and then it's a computer that expands on that. I don't know if that's a very good analysis, but let me know if that makes sense to you. Now, here's some examples that they give of the types of things they want to research, like helping frontline healthcare workers in India, where one woman dies every 20 minutes in childbirth. Improve the management of high-risk pregnancies, tailor agricultural advice to smallholder farms in Uganda, provide teacher coaching to improve educational outcomes in Mali, give critical financial advice through a voice-to-text interface to rural women farmers and business owners in Nigeria. Okay, well, what's wrong with that? Sounds like a nice idea, right? Well, here's what researchers are warning. This comes from a group of sociologists out of the University of Vermont, Oxford, and University of Cape Town. They say that they do not like this Gates Foundation AI initiative because as much as this magic bullet can solve issues, they, as bullets, are also capable of wounding and causing harm. Now, they cite 3 main reasons that we should be worried about the Gates Foundation using LLM, this language modeling, to help poor people because of what these unintended consequences may be, and how if we're not paying attention, this will happen.
Well, they love testing. Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation loves testing these things out first on poor people. They love using Africa, by the way, as a hotbed of testing. Right. So this is not a surprise at all.
Yes, and well, it comes... Go ahead, please.
As Whitney Webb pointed out also, like so did his old dinner buddy.
Jeffrey Epstein.
Mr. Epstein was very big, was very big into funding research on poor people in Africa.
Exactly, because you know they're not going to go to the main. They're not going to get on CNN and complain about it.
Right.
So they don't have a voice, and so that's where you test these things.
Yes. Okay, the first problem, they say, is that LLM has to learn from something. So the data that it pulls in and sucks in this vacuum is problematic in the first place because these programs learn from humans, and we should humbly accept and admit that humans are flawed. So LLM will be flawed in the same way because it starts learning from our programs. In fact, research last year already showed that these language models replicate human biases and ethics. So if they're just sort of automated versions of us, but they already have human flaws, is that progress? And does it sort of help underserved communities if it's based on these already problematic assumptions about underserved communities, right? So if you think about this, like what are some assumptions you make about poor people or hygiene, sexual practices, that kind of thing that might be fundamentally flawed? Well, how is LLM supposed to know that if our understanding of it is flawed? Another worry that these researchers point out is the conflict of interest that means for healthcare providers and how this concentrates power in the hand of companies like Microsoft. They say at the end of the day, the hard, sharp edges of capital, command, and control are in the hands of very few entities and individuals, notably including the conflictingly interested Microsoft, which has self-invested more than $10 billion in OpenAI. So another big concern is surveillance. Should the Bill Gates Foundation get access to survey poor people in exchange for improvement? They call this intrusive, manipulative, and extracted targeted sales advertisements. This surveillance apparatus will be wielded by political actors and states to control discourse on social media, conduct surveillance on citizen activity, and manipulate political opinion and voter behavior. Now, those of us with maybe, I don't know, upwardly mobile lives and a voice may not go for this and say, no, thank you, don't follow me around, Bill Gates. I don't need you to know this stuff. But who's going to speak for the most vulnerable populations? Nobody. They provide a hot test bed of data surveillance. Says the absence of democratic governments of these tools is a grave and growing threat. Finally, they caution that the idea that AI can solve like worker shortages and stuff like, oh, we just don't have enough nurses to help these people in poorer communities, and so we need someone to do data entry or take phone calls. It's probably not ever going to give any poor community better care by automating these things rather than giving them a real person. Here are some examples of what they say. This do more with less heuristic mindset is always mobilized to undermine proposals of expanded social care for the impoverished. Slouching towards hallucination of efficiency, he says, these neoliberal ethos perpetually moves towards hollowing out the material content of services provided to the poor. Experience a debilitating and dangerous psychotic break. You can now just type in with the algorithmic therapist. Well, that's not better, right? Well-trained care. Like, I mean, think about this. If you're going through psychosis and they're like, oh, well, there's no real doctors for you, but here's a chat bot. Does that make you feel better? Don't self-harm. You shouldn't do that, right? These are just, you know, are you poor and facing the terrifying experience of gender-based violence? Well, the provision of a lawyer capable of struggling for legal justice is just not going to be cost-effective, but here's a robot-generated text app guide. So, again, these things should never replace. So while, like, those of us who can afford real people care, the rest of you, like, just use AI. I'm sure that will be fine. It's not going to be better. It won't be better for anyone, so we shouldn't buy this BS. Here's what the authors say we should not do. They're saying that we should not let unelected people make decisions for ordering our society. Says the Gates' active dissemination of these tools is little more than an instance of crass philanthrocapitalist. That's not an easy one. Philanthrocapitalist profit extraction. And so that I'd never heard that word before. I think even though it's hard to say and it's hyphenated in a weird place, philanthrocapitalist, like pretending that you are trying to do something for good, but really it's a capitalistic endeavor, it's profit extraction. So it is handing over Democratic control. So what do you think we should, what they think here is that we must fight back. These are really strong words from a sociologist who is looking at this and saying no, but we're dealing with Bill Gates here, who has already said that he's bullish on AI. He thinks it's one of the best technologies of his lifetime with the biggest potential. Remember, he wrote about this in March, and this article said the age of AI has begun, telling us all the hopes and dreams he has for this. But he himself warned about the possibility of AI sharing things without your permission. Here's how he put it. Well, we might have to work some things out, he said. For example, can an insurance company ask your agent things about you without your permission? Your agent, meaning your AI agent. If so, how many people will choose not to use it? Like, you're going to have this, you know, personal assistant, and a lender can just go in and ask personal questions. He also said, oh, yes, it could kill us. Remember this? He said, could a machine decide that humans are a threat and conclude that its interests are different from ours, or simply stop caring about us? Possibly. But the problem is no more urgent today than it was before the AI developments of the past few months. I mean, I don't know what machine was deciding to kill us before AI. Go ahead, David.
Well, do you remember that when Microsoft released that AI bot on Twitter, and within 24 hours they had to pull it off of Twitter because it had become a racist Hitler supporter?
No, I don't remember that.
A racist Hitler supporter.
And that was
supporter.
A Microsoft test. So
yikes.
So they had to pull it because, like,
and so that,
you remember that, Philip?
They called it Zelensky.
Yeah, I remember that several years back.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So do we really want to give it the power, artificial intelligence, to learn about bodies of poor people, take control of their health, report to Microsoft in the name of philanthrocapitalism? You know, the scary situation here that comes to my mind is that AI learns more about, you know, human behaviors, how the human body works. It has control of all our food and medicine, as these grants said, and then it decides that humans are BS and it poisons us, and that's the end of the story through our food supply and medicines, right? Because it's decided to do that. And we don't know any better because it's too smart for us to know what it's up to. And we gave it that power by allowing it to experiment on poor people. So that's a choice I'd say we'd regret.
Yeah, and it's programmed with a bias. So it's like we talked about Google with the data inoculation. I mean, that's, they're going to basically be able to say, okay, these are the parameters. And so it's like we got to get everybody on these drugs or whatever the end goal is to make them money. They can program it into that. And then, yes, it will learn, but it will learn within those parameters and focus on whatever they want the outcome to be.
Yeah. So let us know what you
more
think.
I was going to say, even more nefarious, though, is not just that, like, letting AI do machine learning from human language, but when you're giving people at the top this power, they're going to be programming it in. It's like you buy a Samsung TV and it all of a sudden has advertisements on it. Like, that you paid for the TV, but it's a smart TV. But we're just going to throw some advertisements in there. Like, if I'm using an AI chatbot for my therapy, and it's just recommending, hey, there's this new drug from Pfizer that I highly recommend, you know, and it's like, they can program it. It's not just learning. They can actually manipulate the output, like, intentionally.
Right. Exactly what Google Bard, I mean, you know, exactly like ChatGPT, right? You're feeding it information.
Yeah.
And so if you're feeding it, you're feeding this type of information to recommend certain medications and drugs and so forth that Bill Gates is profiting off of.
Yeah.
Right. That's inevitable. I mean, that's inevitable.
Yeah.
You know, I am inevitable.
I have invited the authors of this research paper and this sort of pushback paper, warning paper, to come on the show and tell us more about why they think this is terrifying. And hopefully we can make that happen for you in the upcoming days. Let us know if you think that this is, no, this is fine. I'm sure it's fine. Or if you have an otherwise opinion, we want to hear it. We got more news coming up. We're going to talk about how freedom of speech is dead in Europe and dying on the vine, all in the name of anti-Semitism. So let us know what you think about that. But first,
Yeah, it's no secret. I mean, if you're thinking about what's happening in this next year with your family's finances, you need to be thinking about gold and silver as a part of your portfolio. Absolutely the case. Natalie and I have invested big time in silver and gold, and our friends at Lear Capital can help you do this. You don't have to store it at home. We don't do that. We store it off-site, and you can do that as well. Gold coins, silver coins, etc. You can do it per ounce or not. I mean, silver skyrocketing, gold nearly touching $2,000 an ounce, and there's predictions of it hitting over $3,000 an ounce, according to Bank of America and others. And you see these central banks, of course, buying up gold, and they're buying up precious minerals because commodities are so valuable right now. As this unipolar order is starting to collapse, and African nations are saying, hey, get out of our country, get out of here. We want to keep our own minerals, our own commodities. We see the oil rights off of Gaza the British own, the oil rights, that evaporates in 2024. What if they sell those oil rights to Russia? You're seeing this global chessboard playing out right now over commodities. Look what's happening in the Arctic Circle, for crying out loud. So our friends at Lear Capital can help you get set up. And even if you want to convert some of your savings, whether it's in fiat currency, in dollars or euros, into gold or silver, they can do that. They can also help you set up a self-directed account, so where you can actually have total checkbook control of your account, and they control, you control what you purchase. So in this self-directed IRA, you can purchase real estate, you can purchase gold, you can purchase silver, you can purchase anything. You can even buy stocks inside of your self-directed IRA, and then Wall Street doesn't have their hands in it. See, most of the normal IRAs that you have through like Bank of America or Charles Schwab or any of those companies, they make money off of those things and 401k plans. But a self-directed IRA where you can actually purchase gold and silver is powerful. And you work with a custodian and it's very minimal fees. Anyway, Lear Capital can help you get set up with that. Just call them. Here's their 800 number on your screen, 1-800-613-3557. They love to talk to people on the phone, so just pick up the phone. Write that number down. We also have links in the description. If you miss it, you're watching this later, we have links in the description below. You can also go to their website, learredacted.com, and you can also get their free gold and silver investor guide. And right now, they're offering up to $15,000 in free bonus metals with a qualified purchase. So check them out. They have thousands of five-star reviews. They've been in business for many decades. They do an amazing job, and they'll ship it right to your door if you want it, or you can store it off-site. 1-800-613-3557, or go to learredacted.com. They are big supporters of what we do here on this show, and we are big supporters of them. So our thanks to Lear.
Well, free speech is dead in Germany through a new proposed law called the Democracy Promotion Act. It's got a good name, but like most well-named bills, it's usually more terrifying than it sounds. The German government now says that they need laws to protect against anti-Semitism and extremism, so they are extremely controlling speech and threatening to arrest anyone who is critical of Israel. Obviously, what they say is they're trying to catch anyone who is a Islamic extremist, and they can do that if you are criticizing Israel. So this becomes a dragnet for legitimate speech in the name of anti-Semitism. This act has been in the works for more than 2 years, but now German politicians are saying we need it fast and we need it now. They're trying to push it through, given the war in Israel. This is German Interior Minister Nancy Faeser saying, we need this law to protect Jewish people because everyone knows that the way to stop anti-Semitism is to make it illegal, right? When has that ever worked? It's worth noting that anti-Semitic attacks are illegal. They absolutely shouldn't be happening, but you don't need an extra law to make that illegal to graffiti people's property or assault people or threaten churches. Those behaviors are already illegal, but should the expression of any related belief be too? Now, there is an expression in Europe that when Germany breathes, the rest of Europe gets pneumonia. And as someone who is an expat living in Europe, I am extremely bothered that this kind of speech pneumonia may continue to spread throughout Europe. We already see echoes of it in France as well. And worse, again, what counts as anti-Semitism right now, we spoke about this last week with Ramzi Baroud, is that the criminalizing this belief is acting as a dragnet for legitimate concerns about the lives of Palestinian people. We found a report about a protest that happened over the weekend in Germany. Watch how protesters have to dance around the peaceful protests that they're making in order to not violate what now is illegal. Watch.
Free Palestine!
Free! Free Palestine!
It was billed as a free speech demonstration for Palestinians, but it turned out to be one of the biggest pro-Palestinian rallies in Germany since the October 7 terror attacks. Thousands turned out to defend free speech and protest against the bombardment of Gaza.
No one deserves to suffer like that. No country deserves to be destroyed.
Some blamed Israel without mentioning Hamas.
Who's the occupying power? That's it, isn't it? Who's had a siege on the Gaza Strip since 2006?
Others took a more balanced view.
Hamas attacked Israel first, but this does not give Israel the right to bomb the entire Gaza Strip.
The whole world is to blame. They have not found a solution for the Palestinians. The Palestinians live in a tiny area. They have nothing and cannot live like ordinary people.
Previous pro-Palestinian rallies in Germany have seen anti-Semitic chants and ended in violent clashes. This time there was a heavy police presence to discourage any dissent.
While some pro-Palestinian demonstrations have been banned over the last weeks here in Berlin, this demonstration here behind me was allowed by Berlin state officials, but under very clear conditions. No anti-Semitic chants and no anti-Israeli statements, such as denying Israel's right to exist within its internationally recognized borders. There have been some individual cases where these conditions have not been met, but police officials told us that the vast majority did stick to those conditions and that it was mainly a peaceful demonstration.
So these people are censoring themselves around laws, around what is otherwise peaceful expression and legitimate expression, expressing concern about innocent civilian deaths, and while acknowledging that this crisis was prompted by an attack from Hamas, and expressing what is, and now it's so scary that we talked to a few journalists who live there, who don't want to come on camera because of the way that they could be punished by the German government. Now, today, I think in a related news, I wanted to bring you the research and words from a Jewish philosopher that was published today. Surprisingly, actually, I was surprised to read this in the Financial Times. This is a Jewish philosopher named Susan Nyman. She talks about, this is a feature on not just her, but her peace advocacy and her writing. She lives in Germany right now. She is Jewish, and she's warning about this reaction from the German government as someone who's lived there and is Jewish. She says, to many Germans, criticism of Israel clashes with the paramount importance of giving to remembering the Holocaust. To many Jews today, universalism itself feels hollow when parts of the left have shown little compassion for Jews' own suffering. She says, I'm scared about rising anti-Semitism, but I don't think the way to solve the problem is to become more anti-Muslim. That is one direction that people are going in, particularly in Germany. It's an overcorrection, right? Now, she is an expert on Albert Einstein. She runs a museum or an archive or something like that there. She talks about what can be learned from Einstein. She says here, he was a total universalist Jew. She says, we do care about his politics and his biography because that's why he became this cultural icon. The second half of his life, he spent more time as a public intellectual than he did working on physics. He became convinced of the need for a Jewish national home, but feared the cost if it came without peace. This is an Einstein quote. Should we be unable to find a way to honest cooperation and honest pacts with the Arabs, then we have learned absolutely nothing from our 2,000 years of suffering and will deserve our fate. Now, she warns about this idea of being either pro-Israel or pro-Palestine. This is something that we speak about a lot, and I'm thrilled to see somebody else saying this in the mainstream media. She says that she wants to reclaim Jewish universalism as a radical act. Would we call her a non-pacifist peace extremist? I would say she gets a shirt. She says people have differently in so many places across the world become so tribalist. I hate the words pro-Israel and pro-Palestinian. They make it look as if we're talking about a football match. I'm pro-peace. To that, I say bravo.
I love that. I was thinking about that today. I was just walking around. And I was just having a private conversation with myself, which I sometimes do. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, and I was thinking about this tribalism. And, you know, they're not sports teams.
Yeah.
You know, are you pro-Ukrainian? Are you pro-Russian? Are you pro-American? Are you pro-Palestinian?
Right.
This is not college football. They're human beings.
Yeah.
And, you know, is it wrong to be pro-peace in this?
Well, and I always use that as an example, too, when I'm talking to people. It's like people are choosing sides. Like we think that we're ever going to agree on everything, but people can't even agree on sports teams. Like, people fist fight over sports teams.
Right.
And so it's like, you know, I just don't understand that kind of thinking.
The term soccer hooligan exists for a reason, right?
Yeah.
Because people get in fights over football teams in soccer, you know, to Americans.
Well,
I kind of wish it was more like a sports team where the people that started the problem just went and fought each other and leave everybody else alone. Because in the sports team analogy, this would be like going to watch an Eagles game and then like the Eagles occasionally just opening fire on large parts of the crowd. You know, like it's like people that have nothing to do with the actual event itself that are just stuck in there. And it's like that. I would just rather the governments be like, you know what? I have a problem with this country. Let's just go fight in a ring. Let's step into the octagon. All of us politicians.
Yeah.
And then the
trial by combat.
All.
A duel.
Right.
Yeah. Instead of innocent people getting caught in the crossfire, which is what these power, you know, and what happens when these money hungry, power grubbing elites who rule the world, you know, think about it, the innocent people in Ukraine or just the innocent soldiers who get grabbed off the streets and are thrown into the meat grinder.
Well, let's revisit what she says here. She mentions Jewish universalism as a radical act because any peace activists are now called radical. We know this from our own work here. Jewish universalism is the opposite of Jewish nationalism. What that means is the notion that all humankind is under equal consideration and love of God, and we affirm that all paths to the divine are holy. It is universally acceptant. It also means that the Jewish faith, events, all things, all consideration, all lives are worth the same, and all people are welcome into any Jewish spaces, cultural observances, or religious practices. She does not think the current Zionist politicians are practicing Jewish universalism. I do not either. Here's what she has to say about that. She says Netanyahu's policies are creating anger and frustration all over the world, and they will rebound on Jews, like the Dagestan airport attack where the anti-Semitic mob stormed the airport. She says the carpet bombing of Gaza is not in Israeli interests, even if you only care about Jewish lives. And I could not said it better myself. And for that, I bought her book. So read it with me if you would like. Her new book is called Left is Not Woke or something like that. Woke is Not Left. Something to that effect. If you'd like to read it with me, go ahead. But I just wonder, because she is a Jew and she's saying this in Germany, where criticizing Israel is now against the law. So how much longer will she able to be saying these things?
Well, she's criticizing.
While she lives in Berlin. Well, and will they then take the steps of punishing a Jew for violating their anti-Semitic laws?
I mean, but she's criticizing Netanyahu and she's criticizing the government, the Zionist leaders, the corrupt government. I mean, we criticize the corrupt Biden administration all the time. I love America, but I criticize Biden. I criticize, you know?
Right.
So is that, does it fall under being anti-Israel?
Well, again, when these freedom of speech laws are rolled out, they become a dragnet for the most legitimate, you know, because the things that are illegal are already illegal. But making thought and opinion illegal is not going to counter anti-Semitism.
Well, it's the same way I feel about hate crime. Like, well, what exactly is a hate crime? Right.
You don't need the word hate if it's a crime.
Right. You've already killed. Like, you killed someone, but it's a hate. It's a hate killing. You killed the person. Like, what's worse than murder? Oh,
you hated that person.
You hated that person. Oh, okay. So now it's worse than murder.
Right.
Like, it's a hate. What is a hate crime? What does that even mean?
So let us know if you think that a law making anti-Semitism illegal is going to help anybody. And you know, how far will the German government take this? Is this, again, a strong knee-jerk reaction to the Holocaust and maybe not the right thing to do? And will it mean that even a peace-loving Jew can be punished for living in Germany and speaking out against the Zionist government?
You have to imagine, would Albert Einstein have been punished? Like if
for this, yes, for, what for Albert this? Einstein what? Just said would not be have allowed. That
he was,
quote.
You know, and I don't know. I think he was a smart guy. But he would have been in deep shit, you know, if going back to whatever, I think his hometown or one of his places, Ulm, eating that little trout on that little sea, on that little river there and sitting in that restaurant and eating that trout that he used to love to eat and talking about politics and talking about Israel. And he would have been locked up. He would have been fined in prison, perhaps in Germany. Go ahead, Philip.
Yeah, I think that like if Germany, they're like getting into physics, but if Germany did arrest her for speaking out, but then that makes their action of arresting her anti-Semitic because she is Jewish, I think that just spirals infinitely, creates a singularity, and it just wipes out our entire galaxy because
we now have
a black hole
it.
Right where our planet should be. Yep, we all just get sucked into it. Right. So there's your physics for it.
She actually has been sort of, she's been at the center of a cultural storm around speaking out around Zionism. And she was speaking out against laws in Germany that were boycotting Israel. It's a very many like double negatives, so I don't want to explain it again. But she already has been accused of being a self-hating Jew for speaking out against Israel. So or speaking out against criticizing Israel. This is not new to her. This is someone who's already done this. That's another reason I want to read her book, because she's in it. She's been there. She has the experience. So let us know what you think of that in the chat. That's going to do it for us today. I got this. You sound awful.
Tell them about the store.
I will tell them about the redacted store. You go over there get yourself some Vapo Rub.
I was going to comment to some people here in the chat. But
no, you're not going to do that. I can handle it. Don't worry. We want to tell you about the redacted store because, as I said earlier, this woman now, who is my new hero, deserves a T-shirt that says non-pacifist peace extremist. That is a slogan we came up with here on this show, and I will take it to my grave.
People were saying that they... Yeah, go ahead.
We are indeed non-pacifist peace extremists. You also can get mugs, hoodies, things that don't have that awesome slogan, but you can still buy them to show that you are a redacted audience member.
Well, I'm telling you, people were saying they love David's shirt. Where can they get that shirt? He's wearing one of the redacted T-shirts
right now.
Oh,
are you? Yes. In the dark, though. Okay.
Redacted Rebel T-shirt. Yeah. And people also wanted to know what hair salon you're at. They haven't seen.
Yeah, and where the lights went in here.
Yeah,
David always keeps us on his toes to let us know.
We never know what studio he's going to be in today. He's at Linda's hair salon.
Where in the world is Carmen San Diego?
He's getting a wash and curl.
Yeah,
here's Linda right here.
Linda the dog. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, you guys. Please do visit the Redacted store. Let us know what your favorite items are there and send us pictures of you wearing them. Remember, supporting Redacted is easy. You can like and subscribe to the show. You can share with your friends. You can sign up for the free newsletter. All of that is free to you. We do this because we feel very passionate about geopolitical news and making the world better for our kids and yours. So please join us here tomorrow. Clayton should be better. 4 p.m. Eastern every Monday through Thursday. Thanks again for joining us, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.
Good night.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.